I have to admit that is one of the most difficult parashas that I have read and read and read and still lack in understanding of comprehending how they put all those planks and everything together. But then not having any imagination or being able to see things unless I've actually seen them in real life, it's very difficult for me. But they obviously did it. To me, it seems amazing. So today I'm going to speak to you about the blood that went from the sacrifice, at the altar to the blood that was sprinkled on the mercy seat going through that curtain or veil of separation. So let us pray. Abba Father, please open our eyes so we can see the wondrous things from your Torah this day. And may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart be acceptable in your presence, because you, Yehovah, are my rock and my redeemer. And I ask this in Yeshua's precious name. Amen. So I'm going to start from Shemot, Exodus, chapter 25, verses 17 to 22. And it says, you are to make a cover for the ark out of pure gold. It is to be 3 3/4 feet long and 2 1/4 feet high. You are to make 2 cherubim of gold, make them of hammered work for the 2 ends of the ark cover. Make 1 keruv with 1 end and 1 keruv at the other, and make the cherubim of 1 piece with the ark and its 2 ends. The cherubim have their wings spread out above, so that their wings cover the ark, and their faces are towards each other and towards the ark cover. But you are to put the ark cover on top of the ark, and inside the ark you will put the testimony that I am about to give you. There I will meet with you. I will speak with you from above the ark cover, from between the 2 cherubim which are on the ark for the testimony, about all the orders I am giving you for the people of Israel. Now the ark cover was also known as the mercy seat, which is equivalent to a throne. But the issue of the mercy seat comes up in a very important aspect of the Tanakh covenant of atonement. In Vayikra Leviticus chapter 16 and verse 6, it says, Aaron is to present the bull for the sin offering, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and his household. And in chapter 16 and verse 14 of Vayikra, it says, He is to take some of the bull's blood, sprinkle it with his finger on the ark cover towards the east. And in front of the ark cover, he is to sprinkle some of the blood with his finger 7 times. The Ark of the Covenant was where the high priest sprinkled the blood of the sacrifice once a year and in the holiest of holies, and is when we commemorate Yom Kippur. The blood was taken from a slain bullock on the altar, made its way through the outer court, into the holy place, past the parochet or veil, into the Holy of Holies. This journey is a very important journey, as it's also our journey with our personal relationship with Yeshua and Yehovah. The Ark cover, to me, represents the throne of Yehovah. Cherubim and their wings overshadow the mercy seat or the throne of the Ark. With that in mind, we read the following in Yeshayahu chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. It says, in the year of King Uzziah's death, I saw Yehovah sitting on a high, lofty throne. The hem of his robe filled the temple. Seraphim stood over him, each with six wings, two for covering his face, two for covering his feet, and two for flying. Yeshayahu saw a vision of the throne of heaven. And just like the ark, it had seraphim or cherubim with wings above the throne. This also indicates that the mercy seat represents the throne of Yehovah on this earth. The throne of Yehovah in heaven and the mercy seat is the representation of it on this earth. Not only that, but when you compare the sequence of the furniture of the tabernacle listed in Shemot Exodus 25 with that in Revelation 4 at the time Yochanan, the favored Talmid of Yeshua, saw a vision from heaven, we read that the Ark of the Covenant corresponds to this throne of Yehovah. So I'm now going to compare those with you from Shemot and Revelation. So we'll go to the next slide, and we've got Shemot 24:12. Yehovah said to Moshe, "Come up to me on the mountain and stay there. I will give you the stone tablets with the Torah and the mitzvot I have written on them so that you can teach them." And in Revelation chapter 4 and verse 1, it says, "After these things I looked, and there before me was a door standing open in heaven. And the voice like a trumpet, which I had heard speaking with me before, said, 'Come up here, and I will show you what must happen after these things.'" Both Moshe and Yochanan were called to a higher place to meet with Yah. And in Shemot Exodus chapter 25 and verse 10, it says, "They are to make an ark of acacia wood, 3 3/4 feet long, 2 1/4 feet wide and 2 1/4 feet high." And in Revelation 4:2 says, "Instantly I was in the spirit or the ruach, and there was before me in heaven stood a throne, and on the throne someone was sitting." This is, to me, just enforces the idea that the ark corresponds with the throne. And in Shemot chapter 25 verse 31, it says, "You are to make a menorah of pure gold. It is made of hammered work. Its base, shaft, cups, ring of outer leaves and petals are to be of one piece with it." And in Revelation 4:5, it says, "From the throne, came forth lightnings, voices and thunderings, and before the throne were 7 flaming torches, which are the 7-fold spirits of Yehovah." The 7 branches of the menorah correspond with the 7 flaming torches in the throne room in heaven. And in Shemot 26 verse 1, it says, "You are to make the tabernacle with 10 sheets of finely woven linen and with blue, purple and scarlet yarn. You are to make them with cherubim worked in that have been crafted by a skilled artisan." Now this thing that was to be made had the cherubim worked into it. So you had to pass by cherubim to get to the mercy seat that had cherubim on top of it. In 26:31 it says, "You are to make a curtain of blue, purple, and..." It's 26:1. 26:31 repeats it. "You are to make a curtain of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and finely woven linen. Make it with cherubim worked in that have been crafted by a skilled artisan." So Yah truly wants to get that across, that we've got to have cherubim worked into that with fine linen of purple and scarlet yarn. And in Revelation 4:6, it says, "In front of the throne was looked like the sea of glass, clear as crystal. And in the center around the throne were 4 living beings covered with eyes in front and behind. The curtains or the veil and the cherubim correspond to the four, to the sea of glass and the four living creatures. You had to get past that sea of glass and the four living creatures to get to the throne in heaven, as you had to go through the curtain with the cherubim on it to get to the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle. So I can see clear by seeing a clear corresponding list of the elements in Moshe's experience and Yochanan's experience, we can see that the ark represents the throne of Yehovah. These are things to come, as we read in Messianic Jews in our reading today. We are being shown where Yah would rule at the time of Moshe and in the days to come, as he rules in glory and model what was on earth was the ark with its mercy seat, and he told Moshe that he would speak or communicate with him from the ark or mercy seat. This is where Moshe would go every day to talk with Yah. So the mercy seat just wasn't for the high priest to go in once a year, because Moshe went to the ark every single day. It wasn't till the temple was built did they go in once a year only. Excuse me, I'm going to cough. Some people even have their own mercy seat at home where they meet and commune with Yah. The mercy seat was a place where you spoke with Yah, where you told him all your troubles, where he tells you how to fix them. It's a place where you meet with him and commune with him every single day. The receiving of communion is a very important issue in the New Testament church, regardless of its denomination. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 16 to 18, it says, "The cup of blessing over which we make the bracha, isn't it a sharing in the bloody sacrificial death of the Messiah? The bread we break, isn't it a sharing of the body of the Messiah? Because there is one loaf of bread, we who are many constitute one body, since we all partake of the one loaf of bread. Look at the physical Israel. Don't those who eat the sacrifices participate in the altar?" The word communion actually comes from the Latin word communio, which means mutual participation. But if it is not mutual, if everyone does not participate, we refer to it in our congregation as the remembrance service, as not all participate in the service. And we respect each one's decision on that. Even I do not participate, for I'm restricted for dietary reasons. Communing with Yehovah at the mercy seat actually meant speaking with him, not just having communion. But the literal term commune implies a union or oneness and a mutual participation. Whilst communication is when your thoughts from your mind are put into the mind of another person. So the idea of a union or common union is involved. But that is on the condition that we are in agreement. So this is the term used in reference to the stake of execution. When each of us comes to the stake for salvation, that means we believe that Yeshua's death was for each of us individually and we could not be saved without it. We believe Yeshua died for us. His death counts as our death. So we participate in his death, so to speak. And Yah considers us to have been crucified with Yeshua. So we've laid down our life on the altar, so to speak. This is a mutual participation by laying down our lives. This means Yeshua would not have committed to going through his execution without us joining to it as well. I believe he did it knowing that some would reject him and not want to reject him and not want to come into union with him. And I'm sure we all know plenty of people who've rejected our invitation to join with Yeshua. Remember the bull of the sin offering. The death on the altar led to the blood being carried to and being sprinkled on the mercy seat or the throne. The blood of Yeshua gives us access to Him. And He is the one who is seated on the throne that was seen by Yochanan for eternity. Adam was supposed to have dominion over the earth. In Bereshit, Genesis chapter 1 and verse 28, it says, Yehovah blessed them. Yehovah said to them, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea, the birds in the air, and every living creature that crawls on the earth. But Adam sinned, and Yeshua saves us from sin so we can die with Him, as we learn to die to self. This is that what salvation actually means, dying to self, putting others before ourselves. For this salvation to take effect, we need to be buried with Him through immersion and come out of the waters resurrected with Him, and then we are seated with Him in heavenly places. In Ephesians chapter 2, verses 5 and 6, it says that even when we were dead because of our acts of disobedience, He brought us to life along with the Messiah. It is by grace that you have been delivered. That is, Yehovah raised us up with Yeshua HaMashiach and seated us with Him in heaven. But notice how Yah said it to Moshe through our Torah portion today. The mercy seat is where He wants to speak with us. In Shemot, Exodus 20, 25, 21 to 22, it says you are to put the ark cover on top of the ark. Inside the ark you will put the testimony that I'm about to give you. There I will meet with you. I will speak with you from the ark cover. Yehovah wants to speak with us from between the two cherubim which are on the ark of the testimony about all the orders I'm giving you for the people of Israel. Yehovah really wants to meet with you. He wants to speak with you from above, upon the ark, on the mercy seat. He really wants you to come into agreement with Him on the throne so that you can rule with Him. This is part of your salvation. This is what He wants for you. This is how your blessings will come. In Revelation chapter 20 and verse 4, it says, then I saw thrones, and those seated on them received authority to judge. I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for testifying about Yeshua and proclaiming the word of Yehovah. Also those who had not worshipped the beast or its image and had not received the mark on their foreheads and on their hands. They came to life and they ruled with HaMashiach for 1,000 years. I'm going to repeat that. They came to life and ruled with HaMashiach for 1,000 years. They didn't just spend 1,000 years with Him on this earth. They ruled with Him. We've got to get it out of our head that when Yeshua returns, we're just going to live with Him. We're not just going to live with Him, we're going to rule with Him. That's what the Word says. This is our kingdom authority. This is us taking dominion back and ruling with the Messiah. I think many of Yah's people are lost somewhere between the altar where the blood was shed and the ark where it was sprinkled. They really did come into union with Yeshua HaMashiach's death. They made a commitment to Yeshua and are saved. But they have not yet come to the mercy seat in the throne room. They're still in limbo between. In Messianic Jews, Hebrews chapter 4 verse 16, it says, therefore let us confidently approach the throne from which Yehovah gives grace, so that we may receive mercy and find grace in our time of need. We must have confidence to walk in there with the authority given to us through Yeshua HaMashiach, to talk with Yehovah, to be with him and receive his grace. Notice both the throne and the mercy are mentioned in one place. Some people are not coming to the throne to obtain mercy. Similarly, some believers are not coming to the full maturity in the Ruach or the Spirit of enjoying their seating with Yeshua HaMashiach. And here are some reasons. They all revolve around being over self-concerned and not concerned enough about the bigger issue of the body of Yeshua HaMashiach. They are still in the I or me way of living. Both in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and chapter 11, both of these chapters speak of the cup of blessing that we hold dear in our time of remembrance, as we read earlier. And I'll read it again in 1 Corinthians 10, 16 to 18. It says, the cup of blessing over which we make the bracha, that is the blessing, isn't it a sharing in the bloody sacrificial death of the Messiah? The bread we break, isn't it a sharing of the body of the Messiah? Because there is one loaf of bread, we who are many constitute one body, since we partake of the one loaf. Look at physical Israel. Don't those who eat the sacrifices participate in the altar? Many partake of the altar. I propose Yehovah wants you to progress from the altar and start to partake in the throne. Yeshua's body is represented by the loaf of challah. Before COVID, we would all come to the table that held the bread of presence and partake of one loaf. We had to change that to many loaves for hygiene and social distancing purposes. Yeshua took the bread and he broke it, meaning it started out as one loaf, and each Talmud or disciple ate a piece of that loaf. They each came to the same loaf, broke it, and put a piece of it in them. Once the bread was fully eaten, the loaf was not gone. It was within them. It was still there, in their presence. It was in them. It was simply only found when the Talmudim who ate it were together. Together, they were one loaf. Similarly, Yeshua died and was broken. Not a bone of his body was broken, but he was broken in death. And each of us came to that breaking and were immersed into that death. We were then made part of his body. We are one in Yeshua, or one body. Then in chapter 11 of Corinthians, we read, they were eating communally in Corinth and lost the meaning of the one loaf. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 20 to 22, it says, thus, when you gather together, is not to eat a meal of the Lord, because as you eat your meal, each one goes ahead on his own, so that one stays hungry while another is already drunk. Don't you have homes to eat and drink in? Or are you trying to show your contempt for Yehovah's messianic community and embarrass those who are poor? What am I supposed to say to you? Am I supposed to praise you? Well, for this I don't praise you. And from verse 23 to 26, Shaul recounts what Yeshua said about the bread and the wine. And he explains that communion is not just a meal, but it is a message. It is teaching us unity. The people of Corinth were not having a remembrance of the Lord's Supper or Yeshua's last meal by the way they acted during that time and the way they treated each other. While they were fighting and not waiting for each other to eat together, communion or common union was supposed to represent how they were one body. After their fighting and envy was destroying the whole point of the meal while they ate the meal. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 1 and 3, it says, "As for me, brothers, I couldn't talk to you as spiritual people, but as worldly people, as babies, so far as experience with HaMashiach is concerned. I gave you milk, not solid food, because you were not ready for it yet. But you aren't ready for it now either, for you are still worldly. Obviously, from all the jealousy and quarrelling among you, that you are worldly and living by merely human standards." Notice Shaul said he could not speak to them spiritually. They were still in the world. This is not uncommon to this day, even among the people who come to Beit Gan Eden and who have sat under our teaching maybe for decades. Yehovah said he would communicate with Moshe at the mercy seat. Behind the veil was where their communications were to take place. But many of Yah's people never learned union or oneness in a body and are too concerned about themselves. When one is too concerned for themselves, they will work through strife and envy. We need to let go of the self. Let go, and then the striving and the envy will go. Yehovah wants to give them the hidden manna, but he can't while they are so immersed in themselves. In Revelation chapter 2 and verse 17, it says, "Those who have ears, let them hear that the Ruach is saying to the Messianic communities. To him winning the victory, I will give some of the hidden manna. I will also give him a white stone on which is written a new name that nobody knows except the one receiving it." Messianic Jews Hebrews chapter 9 verse 4 says, "Which had the golden altar for burning incense and the Ark of the Covenant, entirely covered with a gold. In the Ark was the gold jar containing the manna, Aharon's red rod that sprouted, and stone tablets of the covenant." The manna was hidden because it was in the Ark. They couldn't see it. It was already in the Ark, under the mercy seat and behind the veil. Notice what we read of the adversary's throne when speaking of the community at Pergamum. In Revelation chapter 2 and verse 13, Yehovah says, "I know where you are living, there where the adversary's throne is, yet you are holding on to my name. You did not deny trusting me, even at the time when my faithful witness Antipas was put to death in your town, there where the adversary lives." The Messianic community was told they would eat hidden manna if they overcame. Manna was beneath the mercy seat of Yehovah and is still there to this very day. In Yochanan John chapter 6 verses 31 to 35, it says, "Our fathers ate manna in the desert. As it says in the Tanakh, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Yeshua said to them, 'Yes, indeed, I tell you, it wasn't Moshe who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father is giving you the genuine bread from heaven. For Yehovah's bread is the one who comes down out of heaven and gives life to the world.' They said to him, 'Sir, give us this bread from now on.' And Yeshua answered, 'I am the bread which is life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever trusts in me will never be thirsty.'" We all know where Yeshua was born. He was born in Beit Lechem. Beit Lechem in English means house of bread. And he, as he has just said, is the bread of life. in Yochanan chapter 9, 6 and verse 49 to 51. It says, your fathers ate the manna in the desert and they died. But the bread that comes down from heaven is such that a person may eat it and not die. I am the living bread that has come down from heaven. If anyone eats this bread, he will live forever. Furthermore, the bread that I will give is my own flesh. I will give it for the life of the world. Sorry. And in chapter 6, verse 53, it goes on and says, then Yeshua said to them, yes, indeed, I tell you, that unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you do not have life in yourselves. Flesh and blood was the bread and wine of the union we have with Yeshua. So eating manna is believing the truths of the steak. When you really eat of that union, or truly understand the union, that you died with Yeshua, you will not be so concerned about something that died. Your concern or self-ego was supposed to die with Yeshua HaMashiach when you accepted him as your Messiah. You are a living sacrifice. So you died and yet are still alive, since Yeshua's death was your sacrificial death. Envy will not appear with someone who is a sacrifice. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 14 and 15, it says, for the Messiah's love has hold of us, because we are convinced that one man died on behalf of all mankind, which implies that all mankind was already dead, and that he died on behalf of all in order that those who live should not live any longer for themselves, but for the one who died on their behalf, but for the one who on their behalf died and was raised. Once we accept Yeshua as our Yeshua, or our salvation, we must no longer live unto our own self-desires. We must die to self and put our loved ones or our neighbour or those we come in contact with in our daily life first. We have to live for Yeshua. We need to let our lives be overtaken with concern of the bigger picture of our part in the body, especially our own messianic community. When you get upset about what people did to you, you are thinking of yourself. But if you live not unto yourself, but unto Yeshua HaMashiach, you don't care what so much about what was done to you. You move on and you let it be. The reason people are not ruling with Yeshua, because they are too concerned about themselves and the hurt they feel because of what someone else said or did. The sacrifice of putting others before oneself leads to the throne. You go from death with HaMashiach to seating with Mashiach. But until you get the idea of sacrifice down in your heart, where you lose self-concern, you will never get to the throne. Yehovah will not allow you into the throne room. The throne is past the parakeet or veil, and the parakeet represents Yeshua's flesh. When Yeshua died on the stake, that parakeet was torn from top to bottom. Not from bottom to top, from top to bottom. Which means it was the tearing of the flesh and the tearing of the veil were happening at the same time. In Messianic Jews, Hebrews chapter 10, verses 19 to 20, it says, so brothers, we have confidence to use the way into the holiest of place, opened by the blood of Yeshua. He inaugurated it for us as a new and living way through the parakeet by means of his flesh. As you can see, I didn't make it up. It's in the scriptures. His flesh was broken in death on the stake. If you truly died with him, then you must appreciate the death with him. And let your flesh rip as well. This is what it means to deny yourself on Yom Kippur. It was what the ripping of the parakeet or the veil means. Ripping away the veil of the fleshly self and living according to Yeshua and his word through him to our Heavenly Father. To deny yourself food on Yom Kippur is so minuscule than to dying to self every day and putting others before yourself. That is what it truly is meant by denying yourself. Now, any questions? Okay, well, we'll move on to the remembrance service.